Now we're going to open up to questions from reporters. Reporters, we'd love to get your questions. Look for the Q&A tab on the bottom of your screen or the three dots. Click on the three dots, look for the Q&A tab. Click on that, type in your name, and just say, I have a question. And then I will unmute you and allow you to ask your question. Our first question is coming from Siri Hedreen. I'm going to unmute you, Siri. Tell us your publication and ask your question.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, thanks. Siri Hedreen with Platts, part of S&P Global. Thanks for doing this. My question is, are there any circumstances that any of the panelists, any of you would approve or even kind of be neutral on a carbon capture project in your community? Or would you say that you're just kind of ideologically opposed to carbon capture in general?
Renee, do you have any thoughts on that, as representing a lot of communities?
The utilization. There's one letter that's being left out of this. We keep saying CCS. It's actually CCUS, which you can take carbon capture and you can use it for utilization. There's a lot of projects that you can use it to make to put into concrete and make concrete. What state does not need concrete? Other than more than Louisiana with our roadways, it's bad. But the problem is why these companies are not going after the U part, the utilization. It does not pay as much as the sequestration. They get paid right now $85 per metric ton for sequestration. And if they use it for utilization, it's like $65. So they're going. They're basing their whole decision out of off of the money, and the sequestration will be sitting on top of the sole water source of 15 parishes, and that's a lot to think about.
Ann Rolfes, I see your hand is up. Go ahead.
Yeah, the comment that I would make is that in its conceptualization, which Abel talked a little bit about. Part of the idea was that it would be used for existing facilities that are pumping a lot of CO2 into the air. And maybe that would be a useful way to approach it, but we're not, that's not how they're talking about using it. They're invoking CCS as a pretend good reason for them to expand, right? It's a rationale for them to expand and to, I would say, massively increase industrialization and destruction. And so, in the current scenario, Siri, absolutely we're against it.
And provide taxpayer dollars for whatever project they're doing. It's a lot of money, as we talked about, not an actual carbon solution for climate change. Our next question is from Elise Plunk. Elise, I'm going to unmute you. Also, unmute yourself and tell us your publication and your question.
Hi there. Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Awesome. So I wanted to ask a little bit about the report. What data sources specifically did you pull from to use the report? And can you also explain how you managed to ID the like approximate locations of projects that had unknown like specific locations?
Preet Bains at EIP, do you have some thoughts on that?
So our data sources include government websites and the Class VI tracker that exists on Louisiana Department of Conservation and Energy's website, as well as news announcements about projects and various other sources. In terms of location, we typically try to use permit locations for most of these. Where the permit location was not available, we just kind of estimated where the location would be based on what information was available by announcement. So if it was in a specific parish or near a specific town, that's kind of the information we used. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you. Did you use kind of a follow-up, I guess? Did you use any federal data as well as state data from the Department of Conservation and Energy?
In some cases, because Louisiana gained primacy over these Class VI applications in 20 just a couple years ago, So before that, if there were applications available through EPA, and we were able to get our hands on those before it was transferred over. So in that case, we were using those federal applications.
Excellent. Thank you.
All right. Our next question is from Allison Prang. Allison, I'm going to unmute you. Also, unmute yourself. Tell us your publication and ask your question.
Awesome. Hi, can everyone hear me?
Could speak up a little bit. Could you turn up your volume?
Yes. Can everyone
Yes,
hear
go
me?
ahead.
Okay,
Yes, I can
great.
hear you. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I've heard of, like I said, I'm a reporter from Bloomberg Law. I cover energy and environmental policy and litigation at the state level. I've heard a lot about how carbon capture and storage technology is sort of unchecked, which I know came up, was an assertion that came up in the press conference. But I've also kind of covered the industry side of things here a lot, and they focus a lot on monitoring, reporting, and verification of the technology. I'm just curious then how it can be called untested, sort of on the same note. Then I have a question I'll ask after that, if possible, too.
Abel Russ, do you want to talk about that question?
Sure, and Preet, jump in if you want. But my understanding of the MMR reports is that it's about the person who's injecting the carbon, their best estimate of how much carbon's been put underground, and that's done for greenhouse gas reporting purposes, and maybe it interacts with IRS tax credit reporting. But if the carbon dioxide is escaping, they may not know it, because most of the monitoring that you might be thinking of in terms of looking for leaks is not happening. The rules, the strict rules for what you have to do to keep track of that are not very strong. And so it's very easy for that carbon to get out and to go undetected. If you know that Archer Daniels Midland carbon dioxide leak a couple of years ago, very easily could have been missed. It was sort of an accident that they discovered it at all. And that might not have actually escaped to the atmosphere, but it was still migrating outside of the confining zone that it was supposed to be in, and opening up a whole bunch of new potential leakage points. And that kind of stuff can go undetected. And so that's why we're saying this is untested. To the extent that there have been carbon capture projects, installed and started, the sequestration part of it, half the time or more, they've not worked out as planned. And so they're still figuring this out in real time. I think Robin mentioned this before. It is an experiment at this point, and it's not going great.
Preet Bains, I think you did a whole report on the gaps and deficiencies of the regulatory structure for carbon capture. Do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think one thing I would also mention is the scale of the projects. A lot of these, the projects that are currently operating are much smaller, and these like proposed projects are in the millions of metric tons per year scale, and that's quite a big jump. And yeah, in terms of the monitoring, these monitoring plans from EPA are, self-reported. So it all requires on the company reporting things, and there's definitely yeah, there it's not as robust as it could be.
Certainly, if a company is self-reporting, that's not the same as having a third-party independent expert doing the monitoring and
Exactly.
reporting. It's a lot of kind of trust me, which, if it's based on estimates by companies getting billions of dollars out of this, I think we should verify and not just trust. So it's a very kind of insufficient system. And Allison, did you have any other follow-up questions?
Wait, sorry, Tom. Can
Yeah, go ahead,
Robin
Anne.
just, I know Robin and I both almost
Go for it.
exploded even when we heard the question, not
Yeah.
because we don't appreciate the question, Allison, just the reality they are just lying.
I want to point out this. When self-reporting with industry is done, we are never going to see accurate numbers. But let's just say for one second that industry does not shove these lies down our throats every single day. Venture Global had 2,000 self-reported, now this is self-reported, not what we know was happening and could see with our own eyes, but they reported themselves 2,000 air emissions violations in the first quarter of operation of their first facility in Cameron Parish.
It began on an LNG terminal, right? Yeah.
To this day, they have suffered not one single consequence of their 2,000 plus self-reported air admissions. Our regulatory agencies are failing us every single day. And when you talk about people being on the ground, we are the people on the ground. This is my community, this is happening in. This is my fishing communities that I've watched be decimated by industry build-out. And all of these regulatory standards that have not been updated in more than 40 years because industry wants to sidestep the data gaps. They don't want there to be data there because they want everyone to be feeding out the palm of their hands and allowing them to be in our backyards doing this to our communities, our water, our air, to everything that matters to us. And they do it without consequence. The regulatory agencies, that's where the problems start. They are not monitoring these people. They are not holding these people accountable. In fact, they are rubber stamping these permits at an extreme rate while they're poisoning and killing the family that we have right up against the fence line. That if we were listening to what industry said, then we would be having schools in the top three in this country and never below the top three. Our roadways would be paved in gold. We would none of us would be unemployed. None of us would be below poverty level. We would all be benefiting if we listened to what industry and our regulatory agencies have promised us for more than 80 years.
Really, a lack of oversight by industry, both in the regulatory structure and enforcement. As Robin points out, that LNG terminal in Cameron, thousands of violations and no real consequences for that big new LNG terminal. Allison, does that answer your question?
Yeah, to an extent, yeah. And then the second one I had is a little bit different if there's time. I know environmental groups a lot of times talk about how CCUS doesn't actually help the climate fight. You know, it continues the life of fossil fuels, what have you. But I know locals around the US I've spoken to, like this is a big issue in Iowa also. They don't seem really worried about so much the global warming and their opposition to these CCUS projects. They seem to be more worried about other issues. I'm just wondering if there's at all of a disconnect there between the reasons environmental groups are opposed to these projects and locals are, and if maybe someone could talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, Abel, maybe you can tackle that. I mean, one observation I have is that both are true. I mean, communities are concerned about safety, as we've heard today from our panelists. And we're concerned about whether this is a false solution, money going to a false idea. And so it's basically kind of a fraud on the taxpayers. Both can be true at the same time. But Abel, do you want to address that?
I don't think I have much more to add. I think you're right. I mean, our organization's mission is all about accountability and reducing pollution. And so, what you see with a lot of these, the whole carbon capture and sequestration, including the carbon capture part, is that it's just financing more industrial development, more NOx, more VOCs, more ozone problems. And all of that is the kind of work we do as part of our bread and butter. The carbon dioxide angle, I think we all worry about climate change. I think it's safe to say to some degree or another, and that's really upsetting. But like Tom was saying, it's really also an accountability and an integrity issue because this amounts to fraud, in my opinion, because it's being pitched as something that it's not, and they're getting a ton of money for it, and we're not getting anywhere near a commensurate benefit, if any benefit at all. So it's just it's an environmental justice issue, it's an accountability and tracking issue, and it has to do with a lot of pollutants, not just carbon dioxide.
Does that answer your question, Allison?
That's fine. Thank you.
Great. Okay. Reporters, if you have questions, we'd love to get them. Go down to the Q&A tab at the bottom of your screen and look for the three dots. Click on that, click on Q&A, type your name in there. Our next question is coming from David Mitchell of the Louisiana Advocate. David, I'm going to unmute you, unmute yourself, and ask your question.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
I kind of have two. Just as far as the report, what number or what percentage of the pipelines you identified being under development or planned tie into the Denbury line? And could you name again the two CCS projects that have started in LA? I'm only aware of one. I have one other after that,
Hey,
though.
Baines, why don't you go ahead and tackle that?
Yeah, in terms of the number of pipelines that tie directly into the Denbury line, I know that I'm not sure of the exact number of these. I can double check that for you and get back to you. The Denbury Green to Ascension Clean Energy one is one of them. So is the Louisiana 122 pipeline. That also will eventually tie into the Denbury line. And I believe also the Lake Charles Lateral does. I can get back to you on the exact number.
Okay.
In terms of the two operating projects, one is the Donaldsonville Nitrogen Complex. I believe that's probably the one that you know is already operating.
Right.
And then the other is the New Generation Gillis Treating Plant, which has started up very, very recently. It seems like the facility itself is operating. They do have a contract with Exxon to transport the CCS, and it's not clear what the status of that contract is, but it seems that the facility itself, which is equipped with carbon capture equipment, is operating.
That's in Gillis.
Yeah.
If you look on the report, David,
I haven't seen it yet. That's why I'm operating.
take a look on our website. You can find the report, and both of those are listed with the full name of the facility. And if you can't find it, shoot me an email and I'll send you the report afterwards. But they're both listed by name and location on the report.
Can I jam one more in real
Yeah,
quick?
go ahead.
Okay, so the bigger question is, I've been to several of these hearings in Louisiana and Ascension for the one in Lake Marpa, and some groups have been calling for what they call a programmatic review of like looking at everything all together, basically. Is this what you're seeking? The state is already doing something they're saying. Is that not enough? Or kind of can you define what you're looking for? Is it just no, or is there, we need to kick the tires and think about what we're doing?
Renee Savant, do you want to tackle that one? I mean, obviously, the governor's moratorium does not affect existing projects that are going on. Renee, you're muted. Why don't you unmute yourself and tackle that one
Yeah.
if you want to respond?
What, could you recap that question? It kind of was, David was breaking up. Could you recap the question for me, Tom, real quick?
Do we
His
think,
question,
David, you can ask it again, but I think he was essentially saying,
ask.
do we want to just stop them all, or wasn't the governor's moratorium good enough?
It was a little more,
No,
def oh,
David, why don't you go ahead?
sharper
I'm
than that.
sorry. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay, so some groups like Healthy Gulf have called for what they call a programmatic review, where they're saying, "Hey, CORE, hey, DC&E, you need to look at all these projects together: the pipelines, the facilities, the storage, all as one thing." So you examine it as a totality. Okay, and what I'm saying is, when the governor declared his moratorium, they also announced that they were going to be reviewing the other there were six that were fast tracked, and the remaining were going to be reviewed, prioritized, et cetera. And so what I'm trying to get you to explain is, are you looking for a deeper review from the state? Is what the state saying they're doing enough? Are you saying we just don't want it, period, and that's that? I'm just trying to understand what you're really calling for.
Okay, so we have the component of the capture. We're not going to, as long as we have enhanced oil recovery, which 40 years they've been doing the enhanced oil recovery. The main issue in with those six and with however many more that they bring is where we're having the main issue is the sequestration, these class six wells and the pumping of the CO2 byproduct. And if you could only see some of the list of what is actually combined with that CO2, putting it in the ground. And we stand firm with those six projects and any projects that come behind that, we're definitely against the sequestration. Of course, the CO2 pipelines, we're not saying that we're going to jump up and down, but we are not, as far as the Louisiana CO2 Alliance, we're not against the oil and gas industry. It's paid for many a college educations here in the state of Louisiana. We're just concerned about the safety. You cannot put these CO2 pipelines 1,000 feet within the schools. They refused to pass safety bills in Baton Rouge, 2000. David, you've been there during secession, 2003, 2004, 2005. We can't even get safety bills out of the Natural Resource Committee. If they are going to do the CO2 pipelines, if they are going to do these projects, we have to be kept safe. Our children have to be kept safe. There has to be accountability. If they're going to put a limit on how much they're going to, our life is only worth $500,000 in the event of death. If they're so sure about these projects, why do we have these liability caps? There's just nothing in place to protect the citizens. And that's where, so as of right now, with no laws of safety, accountability, we have to say no to all of them.
From EIP's perspective, Abel, I'd love to get your thoughts on this. But I think our perspective is this whole field needs better regulation, stronger permits, more oversight, and more scientific study. And until that time, they should all be put on hold because we just don't have the oversight and the regulation and the proof needed to really move forward with these kind of projects. Abel, what do you think?
Yeah, just real brief anecdote. I was speaking to an industry proponent who is in favor of carbon sequestration, but was very concerned that what's going to happen is that these projects are going to fail. It could be catastrophic. It's going to give the whole industry a black eye, and then it's going to shut the whole thing down. You know, in other words, they're just moving ahead recklessly without any guardrails, and that's what I think a lot of people are nervous about.
David, does that answer your question? Okay. So our next question is from Eva Tesfaye. And Eva, I'm going to unmute you, unmute yourself, and tell us your publication. I apologize if I screwed up your name there. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead. Thank you.
Yeah, and it's Tesfaye.
Test five, sorry.
And I'm with WWNO and WRKF. I have two questions. The first one is I was wondering if you could talk about if you guys looked at why Louisiana has more of these new projects than other states. Does it have anything to do with the state being granted primacy over carbon injection wells? And then my second question is I'm wondering what the speaker's thoughts are on Landry's moratorium on new carbon capture and sequestration projects that was enacted in November.
Renee, do you want to tackle those?
Sure. The first one, repeat the first one real quick, and then because I was focused on that second one, I was already answering the second one. Hit me with the first one real
The
quick.
first one was why is Louisiana have more projects than any other state?
Okay. Correct. Well, primacy is a key component. Okay. We were one of the first of three states for primacy. And they also claim that, because of our geographic formation, the rock formation, but we have geologists that will dispute that Louisiana has the perfect formation for sequestration. I just think these projects, Louisiana is prime target to give the okie-dokie stamps and to, I mean, look at the fast track program. That's a perfect example. I don't know of any other states that have developed a fast track program on a fast track program because primacy is a fast track program, and now they're able to pay extra money to get their permits even faster. Louisiana is the only state that I know of that has a pay to play program. As far as the governor's moratorium, that come into play. He was in a meeting with some Louisiana citizens, and he made the statement to some parish individual parish members, parish police jury members, that if you don't want it, you're not getting it. That was a very strong statement to make. So after he made that statement, he made it that in order he put the pressure back on the corporations to come into the parishes and win the parishes over. Well, that's not worked. Right now, there's 12 parishes that have signed resolutions that they do not want these projects in their parishes. And the moratorium was after they lost Tyler Gray and Dustin Davison stepped up. There was not the capacity within the department to process these permits. They were being bombarded. So the moratorium was a way for the department to regroup and for the governor to regroup, for him to stand behind the commitment that he had made to these elected officials, these local elected officials, that if you don't want it, you ain't getting it. So it was a combination of both.
And kind of touch on one point that Renee made there. Primacy, for all of those out there who don't know what that means. Louisiana was one of the very first states to stand up and say, we want this. We want to have regulatory control over carbon capture and storage, not EPA control, but state control, because the elected officials in Louisiana wanted this money. And a lot of it is billions of dollars in taxpayer subsidies going to the oil and gas industry, which has a lot of friends in the Louisiana legislature. So that could be a factor. Louisiana kind of elected officials wanted this federal money. Evan, does
Can
that answer your question? Go
Tom,
ahead.
let me just
Yeah,
add one
go ahead.
point.
Yeah.
I will share. I'm not sure if there's a link on their website. I'm looking for it now. Save My Louisiana had a statement after that moratorium that I think is very instructive for people. So if I can't find the link and put it in the chat right here, I'll just email it to you. They put that out right within days of him really, announcing that moratorium, which really is kind of a fake response. So I found it is a fake response given that it has no impact on everything that's already been approved.
Right. Correct.
Anyway, I'm putting it right in the link to their Facebook page in the chat right now.
So we're getting up to towards the hour here. Eva, does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
All right. Question
Wait, Tom,
now.
I'm not able to put anything in the chat that'll go to everybody. So anyway, I'm putting it in. You'll see it, but if you could share it with
I'll share
everybody.
that. Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Next, we have Delaney Nolan. Delaney, I'm going to mute you, also unmute yourself and ask your question.
Hi, thanks. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, Delaney Nolan from The Lens. I wanted to ask about if someone could talk a little bit about the eminent domain laws for carbon capture and storage and how they might compare or differ for eminent domain laws with other parts of industry, like natural gas pipelines.
Renee, do you know much about the eminent domain issue? Go ahead if you do.
So the eminent domain laws that are in place now on CO2, they actually started putting them. The very first law was, they've been working on this for a very long time, was in 2008, and then they enhanced it in 2009, and then it really got amped up in 2020 with Act Number 61. And the difference with eminent domain is the CO2 pipelines that they're using right now for sequestration, it serves no public good. Gas, eminent domain, we've had it forever. If they need a right of way for electricity, for natural gas, the citizens have a need for that. We have no need for CO2 to be buried, sequestered. It serves no purpose. And in 2006, I would encourage everyone to go look up the amendment that we passed, the Louisiana Citizens in 2006, that said eminent domain could not be used for private gain and or economic development. And if you'll look at any ad that ExxonMobil, Oxy, and any of these guys have out on CCS, they talk about economic development. The whole anytime the governor talks about these projects, economic development. So it cannot, and there's a lawsuit pending right now by Save My Louisiana, but it cannot be used for private gain and or economic development, and these CO2 pipelines do both. So it is unconstitutional for them to put eminent domain in place and to take our land for this purpose.
And Delaney, I think you had another question related to technology. Go ahead.
Yeah, I did. I mean, it's a little bit of a related to what Renee was saying. I wonder if you all think that there's any kind of carbon management technology that would be necessary to reach net zero. Obviously, some people argue that there will need to be some kind of carbon removal because afforestation, for example, won't be enough. So, Renee, it sounded like earlier you would be supportive of some kind of carbon removal technology, just not the storage element.
Well,
Well, I just wanted to, for example, direct air capture, geologic sequestration with biomass, turning carbon into carbon-based products. So, but this is a question for everyone. But sorry, yeah, go ahead. Thanks. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
yeah, go
Sorry.
ahead. Do you have any kind of thoughts on that? Go
Okay,
ahead.
well, yeah, I'll attempt to do that. As far as carbon capture, there's nothing in place to make us do carbon capture. And you've got to stop and think, what's the risk involved? Okay, you're gonna sequester, we're gonna capture the carbon, and then we're gonna put it under our aquifers, Lake Chico, which is the sole water source for 15 parishes in the state of Louisiana. It provides water for 700,000 Louisiana residents. What happens when that water is contaminated? They have estimated that just to start the cleanup, and that doesn't give us any water. That's just to truck water in for the people, for livestock. The first year alone, it will cost $3.5 billion to get water to the 700,000 people. So you got to weigh the risk. I understand releasing the CO2 in the air is, possibly not the best thing, but trees thrive on CO2. But to add all the byproducts into the CO2 and then bury it under our sole water sources, there's an issue. There's a serious issue.
My thought on that would be obviously carbon dioxide releases is a major problem. Greenhouse gas is a major problem. Climate change is a major problem. We're all in favor of addressing those problems with things like clean energy, wind, solar, battery storage, and even making industries more efficient, using more updated technologies to operate more efficiently. We're all in favor of that kind of technology, and we're in favor of innovation. We're just concerned with carbon capture and storage. There's insufficient regulation, insufficient inspection, and there's not enough science that really shows this works. So we're all in favor of technology. We're all in favor of innovation. We're definitely in favor of tackling climate change. But what we have here is not working, and it's a waste of taxpayer dollars. It's a false solution. And with that note, I'm going to wrap it up. Thank you, everyone, for coming to our press conference. If you have any follow-up questions, send them to me at tpelton@environmentalintegrity.org. Also, visit our website at environmentalintegrity.org. We have a whole page dedicated to carbon capture and storage. On that is this map that I think Abel mentioned that shows the location of all the Louisiana oil and gas wells that we know of and how close they are to the carbon sequestration sites. We have some studies on our website, including Preet's look at how insufficient the EPA regulatory structure is for permitting carbon capture projects. There's a lot of resources on our website. But give me an email if you have any more. And thanks, everyone, for helping out, and have a wonderful afternoon.